The Womanity Project. Let's talk about gender. Genders. Gender? Gender equality.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Womanity Project Live. I'm Aurélie Harp and you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Yesterday was International Women Day. I'm not sure what I think about that. I'd rather say International Women's Strike Day. Yes, yesterday, the organizers of the Women's March called for a global women's strike day, hashtag Day Without a Woman, and asked women to strike, not shop, or only for to support a female shop, and wear red. And at this occasion, we all wore red in the studio, all our guests and hosts in red. Today, we are chatting with actress and writer Melody Bates and dancer and choreographer Hedy Barnhill.
Yes.
Hi, Melody and Hedy, and welcome to the Womanity Project.
Hi.
Hello.
It's
hello,
good to
hello.
Be here.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Today, we're going to talk about your new play that is coming soon. I guess mm-hmm. It's starting on Friday.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And it's called The Cabaret at the End of the World.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to read that. A play with music by Melody Bates and Rebecca Hart, directed by Joanne Jubbett, choreographed by Hedy,
yes.
Right? And in a few words, can you describe the play?
Sure. So this is a two-woman, plus a few, mm-hmm. Riff on Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. And Caesar, Julius Caesar by Shakespeare, is a play that is enormously focused on the male experience of that historical series of events. So this play does the fairly radical act of considering those events from the perspective of two non-aristocratic women. It is super fun. There are jokes and beautiful songs, and also it has a very serious sort of social experiment underwriting the fun times.
Ooh. Yeah, and I guess I was brought in to this to add to the language with movement. And so the sisters, mm-hmm. Flora
and Fauna.
Fauna.
We run the hottest underground club in ancient Rome.
And they are talented because they're a one-stop shop, dancing, singing. Also, instruments are played.
That's true.
Live. So it's really beautiful to work with such talented people. And in this cabaret, you know, they're doing dances and numbers. So I came in with the hope to bring some light and some humor with the movement, which I think beautifully connects to the darkness and the mm-hmm. underground theme of what's going on.
Yeah, and Hedy is a gorgeous choreographer, and like her work is so sophisticated and nuanced, and we sort of gave her an offer with this production, which was like, could you help us make some things that aren't as sophisticated and nuanced? And like the nuance is still there, the sophistication is still there because she's so good. And also, it's layered into this kind of vaudeville style of the club, because the style of the piece is it has elements of that kind of Weimar era cabaret mm-hmm.
yes.
idea.
What do you think is important for you for that the audience understand seeing the play?
Well, I am, as an artist, I am a populist, so I really want my audiences to have a good time. That doesn't mean I don't want to challenge them. I absolutely do want to challenge them. But I like to wrap it in something where they don't even realize how much they're being challenged. I hope that people come away having had that good time and also really thinking about the ways in which inequality sucks for all of us. Mm-hmm. Women and men, people of all genders, like it patriarchy victimizes everybody, which I think is an issue that we wrangle with mm-hmm. in this show.
Has it been something you've been thinking about for a long time, or is it an emergency right now?
Patriarchy, I've been thinking about it the whole time. But it's totally an emergency right now. So this piece was commissioned last spring by a wonderful theater up in Maine called Opera House Arts at the Stonington Opera House, where I do a lot of, I act in a lot of Shakespeare up there. They supported the writing of my first play, R&J&Z, and then they commissioned this piece from me and Rebecca. And when we wrote it last year, the sort of first draft of it, it was much lighter, much, it had less gravity to it. And then our friend J. Stephen Brantley, the visionary artistic director of Hard Sparks, who's producing the play, said he wanted to do it in New York. And I thought, great. And then in November, the election happened. Mm-hmm. And I woke up the next day, devastated like all of us. And then in short order thought, oh God, the satire in that is going to take a turn for the darker. So there is definitely like the way that we deal with who's in power in Rome. And of course in Julius Caesar, the events of Julius Caesar are very much turning on who is in power, who's going to get power, who the people who are sort of in power want to stay in power. It's all of this back and forth. And meanwhile, the vast majority of the population of Rome is not really considered in terms of who has a voice in the storytelling of Shakespeare's play. So my play is trying to give a voice to some of those people who don't get much time.
And you know, it's interesting because when I first met Melody at the Met, that's how we met, the Metropolitan Opera, we were talking about a future project that we are very excited to work on. But before that, she brought me into this. And I think it's important, of course, with the scape of the world right now, not only to create content that that's very honest to what's going on, but it's also important to support a woman writer, a woman choreographer, because even if there wasn't a social climate base to the play, which there is, there's still a protest in just being that we are women creating. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important now.
And especially forever. Today.
Yeah.
Especially. Absolutely. And most of our creative team is female.
Yeah.
Myself, Hetty, Rebecca Hart, the composer, lyricist, our director, Joan Jabet, the whole team. I, as an actor who works in classical theater, I deal every day with the fact that the ratio of male roles to female roles is 7-3. So I'm always on the losing end of that. In Julius Caesar, it's 49-2.
Wow! Yeah.
So, in terms of the storyteller's choices about whose experience matters, it's rather clear that it's not the women's experience that matters. And that's outrageous. That's outrageous. It is something that we see at every level of our storytelling. You know, if you look at Gina Davis's Institute for the Study of Women in Film, they have statistics on how outrageously imbalanced percentages of male roles, male speaking lines in films to the female equivalent. Even crowd scenes in films are 17% female, as if that were an accurate representation of a world that's like 51-52% female. That's again going back to my populism as an artist. Populism is for the people, mm-hmm. not just the male people. Mm-hmm. Therefore, mm-hmm. telling this great, you know, the story of these extraordinary and well-remembered events from the perspective of some people whose perspective was not represented by Shakespeare is really valuable.
Very.
And so to finish on the play, mm-hmm. when is it? Where can we see it? Where can we buy tickets? Tell us about that.
Yes, yes, yes. So we open March 10th at the IRT Theater on Christopher Street in downtown Manhattan. We run through March 19th. You can buy tickets at irttheater.org. You can also find us on Facebook at our event page for the cabaret At the End of the World. There's a matinee on the Ides of March, yes, if that's your thing. We really, really hope that people will see it. It's going to be a good time.
And there's, the talk back.
Oh, right. On our Saturday evening performance on March 18th, there is a talk back on the intersection of art and politics, which will feature Hetty, whose work, and maybe you can speak a little bit about, she's done a great deal of choreographic work around Black Lives Matter and other political issues. So she's going to be on our panel, as well as David Drake, who is a wonderful theater artist, actor, director, writer, and ACT UP activist. And myself, I've done some... I used to help run the satirical protest group Billionaires for Bush. So look them up.
So can you tell us more about your activism?
I'm an actress, dancer, singer, and having 8 years on Broadway, I felt like it was part of my dream to always play a character, but I felt and always been connected to just really have a social climate, and as an artist to do work that that connects and is inclusive. Now, with that said, I have a passion for the Black Lives Matter movement, and to me, Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm, it starts with my life, but also is very inclusive. And I know the last couple of years, months, has been torn down to represent something that is not, and that's why I think it's important for me to say it, so it's not so scary. I have an organization called Create a Space Now, and what we do is we document, and sometimes have a cinematic feel, to different things that's going around the world. We did a piece based on all the police brutality. We had brought a couple of people in, had questionnaires asking them just a few questions about how they perceive different things in their life and compare it to all of our questions. And we were different genders, different races. And so this is all beautifully documented on creativespacenow.org. And our last piece we did so far is She Said. It was a piece inspired by Michelle Obama's words. She is the music in the piece, and is two dancers. I'm one of them. Monica Woods is another. But it's my passion to do it. And we just recently interviewed, there's a young lady upstate New York who's been married to her husband, not even 6 months, and he's legal, but he had to do a test, and he has a misdemeanor, and they deported him. Mm-hmm. So the news has been up there. I'm giving you the quick version of it, but because I don't want to say anything that's wrong, but we are in the process of interviewing her now and bringing something out just to continue her voice and help her and see how we can help her.
And I have the chill just listening to you. Let us know how it goes, if you need any platform to talk about it.
Yes, please.
And we can talk offline.
You've been listening to The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn.
So, Melody and Hetty, now it's time to, you already talked a little bit about yourself, but if you can tell us where you're from, your family, a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I am originally from Oregon, and that's very much a part of my identity. I grew up with a father who was a writer and a mother who was a French teacher and a painter. So there were always a lot of arts in and around the house, but no actors, no filmmakers, no theater artists. And yet I was always performing. Like, I was always making plays. when I was about 9, we went to see The Taming of the Shrew at the Ashland, Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And it changed my life in that it really woke what was inside of me. And like a year or two later, I said to my family, I had a children's version of A Midsummer Night's Dream. And I was like, we should do this when we go to the lake. My grandparents had a little cabin on Odell Lake in the High Cascades. And I was like, yeah, we should do this play at the lake. And no one said no. And so we did it, like me and my cousins and my brothers and my grandma's dress-up box on the shore of a lake doing Shakespeare as like kids. And that I always feel like that story about me says the whole thing. Like, I
love it. Great. What about you, Hattie?
I'm from St. Louis, Missouri and East St. Louis, Illinois. And if you know St. Louis, Missouri, East St. Louis, Illinois, that's the equivalent of Jersey City and Manhattan. That's how close they are. But it's two different states. So I always have to say I'm from both. My mother moved to St. Louis, Missouri officially when I was 14. But I was a product of both states. I had a childhood that was filled with dance. My mother put me in dance when I was 3 because I was that hyper. She didn't know what to do with me. And then I started singing and acting with the Muni Opera when I was 11. And so I always say dance was my first language. And I was a product of many after school activities, many instructors coming from all around the world to give children, my friends, myself, some time of what professional artists look like. And I am such an advocate of after school programs because that was my life. And that's the reason why I continued having a passion in the arts. And it helped me get scholarships to college. And it got me to New York City and got me on Broadway. Because if I wasn't introduced to those things, maybe some of the things that my mother couldn't afford, I would never have seen them or known. Mm-hmm. So yes, dance and acting and singing. Grew up, went to Columbia and Chicago for dance and marketing, and moved to New York City to pursue my dreams, mm-hmm. to perform and to create.
Great.
If I can just chime in on that, mm-hmm. I am also a product of really extraordinary after-school programs in the public schools. I'm also a proud product of the Head Start program, yes. which no doubt is going to get gutted by this administration. So bummer about that, because I wouldn't be the person I am today without it.
That's right.
True. Going further in the womanity questionnaire, what gender do I identify with and what are the attributes you give to that gender?
I'm female, and that just means to me that I'm a person.
It's the same. It's interesting because I have a group of friends now. We have so much conversations about this because I have a friend who don't really identify as, you know, female or male. And I always say I have very submissive, aggressive parts of who I am, but I never consider that being gender neutral. I consider myself being a female. My gender is female, queer female.
Great. And is there a moment in your life when you were particularly grateful to be a queer female, a female?
More than none, especially the Women's March that day was, yeah. I felt so strong, but I always say I come from a two-parent household, but not with a father. My father died when I was 6. My grandmother, my mother raised me. And so from the time I was young, I had this perception of women just being strong and being full because they were my everything. So most days I am so happy to be a woman. I think there is a strength. I think there is a sensitivity. I think there's layers to us that is not even yet to be found out.
Yeah, I'll pick up on that, talking about that moment of the Women's March. Hattie and I had a matinee of Romeo and Juliet mm-hmm. at the Met that we, again, as Hattie said, that's how we met. And we finished the matinee and got out of our giant costumes and went out to join the Women's March with three or four other people from our cast. And I've done a lot of protesting. I've done a lot of marches, and I've never felt that kind of solidarity, mm-hmm. true solidarity, not just with the people in the march, but like even from the police, mm-hmm. like even everybody, whatever it was about the way that that march was framed, it succeeded in reminding everybody that we're all in this together, men, women, all of us.
Mm-hmm. Great. And on the opposite, were there a day or moment in your life when you felt limited or challenged by your gender?
Maybe, you know, the two-show day when I'm cramping.
I'll say, you know, so my first play is a play called R&J&Z, which is... it starts with Act 5 of Romeo and Juliet and continues in verse as the dead come back to life. And it is, there is a kind of ridiculousness to that concept. And it's very funny and very scary, but it's also totally earnest. And it's a feat of writing. It is an entire play in verse, good verse. And there were points, it was very well received. Premiered in Maine, and audiences loved it, and critics loved it, and it came to New York, and similar reaction here. But there was a tone in some of the writing about it that I just wondered, would they not have noticed the intellectual quality of the work if I were a man? I think if I were a man, if they thought the writer was a man, the focus would have been like, my goodness, look at this intellectual accomplishment.
Not only, oh, a woman wrote that.
Right.
Right. I mean, you know, who can know that? And I don't care. I don't live my life in that, you know, in that question at all. But it does cross my mind.
It's interesting. In college, my thesis was doing a piece on five men and how I saw them through my eyes. And the first question I got is, what do you think you had to offer from this as a woman? And I said a lot. You know, it's just, I have a problem with trying to explain why I needed to be equal. And so when I made that joke about the cramps, it's true. I usually don't ever feel limited by being a woman. I feel that other people limit me.
Right.
Who was the strongest female influence in your life?
My mother.
Yeah, my mother.
My mother is extraordinary. She is a pillar of strength. She has always been a justice warrior. She has always been a deeply intelligent, extraordinarily kind force in my life. Eloise Bates, I love you so much.
Priscilla Dixon, my mom, I've seen her defy gravity. You know, I've seen her just make the impossible possible, and just an inner charge that she has and still has to this day. This morning called me, just checking in on me. But yeah, she has given me all the opportunities and been my cheerleader and my soldier and my warrior.
Great.
I would say our mothers give us wings.
Mm-hmm. Is there a woman that you'd like to thank, if not your mother?
Michelle Obama for me.
Oh my! I would like to also thank Michelle Obama.
Be focused. Be determined. Be hopeful. Be empowered. Empower yourselves with a good education. Then get out there and use that education to build a country worthy of your boundless promise. Lead by example with hope, never fear. And know that I will be with you, rooting for you and working to support you for the rest of my life.
She brought a new level of class, and for me personally, and I think a lot of younger generations, a connection to the political system.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to thank you both very much for coming here today.
Thank you.
No, really, it's amazing how in 20 minutes, 40 minutes we can connect. And remember, people, to go and see the cabaret at the end of the world. This is from March the 10th to the 18th.
To the 19th.
Oh, to the 19th at the IRT Theater.
Mm-hmm. 154 Christopher Street.
Great. You've been listening to The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn. You can like us and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Womanity Project. You can support us and sponsor us on our page, radiofreebrooklyn.com/The Womanity Project. We don't have any advertising. We really rely on people's support. So yay to that. Every dollar counts. Thank you very much, Melody Bates, Hedy Barnhill, Lizzie Axtett, who composed our music, and of course, Radio Free Brooklyn. Tune in next week, The Womanity Project, on Radio Free Brooklyn, every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Au revoir tout le monde! À la semaine prochaine!
Au revoir!
Bye, au revoir! Sex is obscene. We've got it twisted in this lucid dream. Baptized in boundaries, schooled in sin, divided by difference, sexuality and skin. Oh, so we can hate each other and fear each other. We can build these walls between each other, baby, blow by blow and brick by brick. Keep yourself locked in, yourself locked in. Yeah, we can hate each other and fear each other. We can build these walls between each other, baby, blow by blow and brick by brick. Keep yourself locked in, yourself locked. Oh, maybe we should love somebody. Oh, maybe we could care a little more. So, maybe we should love somebody instead of polishing the bombs of holy war. What if sex was holy? Was obscene and it wasn't twisted. What a wonderful dream. Living for love, unafraid of the end. Forgiveness is the only real revenge. Oh, so we can heal each other. Feel each other, we can break these walls between each other, baby, blow by blow, brick by brick. Keep yourself open, yourself open.